Good evening. It's really good to see everyone here tonight. Appreciate, again, this opportunity that the elders have given me to break the word of life to you. And tonight, the topic that I selected is based on dislocation. Now, just looking at it, the pictures, like maybe some construction site, possibly even could be here in the Massachusetts area, but it's not enough trees. There are a few trees, but anyway. But this location has great impact on many people, and there's a great question about actually who owns this. And the question that comes up about this is, to whom does the land of Palestine belong? So this is Palestine, Palestinian conflict. The great land, or the land of Israel, arguably, has been the area of greatest conflict in the world. You look at history, you studied history, there's been a lot of turmoil in that region. And the region, as most of you already know, is Israel, the little yellow spot there in the middle, surrounded by a bunch of Muslim nations. And Israel is actually about the size of New Jersey. I don't want to compare it to New Jersey, but actually that's the kind of size that it's compared to. So. But anyway, that's the land that we're talking about. And hardly a day passes that the conflict between the Jews and the Arabs is not in the news somewhere. You look in the newspaper, you look on the internet, you look on the nightly news, there's always something out there. You know, the people who live in Israel live in fear. There's almost daily bloodshed to some degree, and they're always dealing with terrorism. You know, that's recent for us, the past 9 years or so, but they've been living with terrorism since the foundation of their country back in 1948. And so that's something, a part of their daily lives. And we really don't understand it. So hopefully, Lord willing, we won't. But, I mean, that's something that they constantly deal with, is that potential for death just walking down the street. Why is it such a conflict? What's the problem? You know, the problem is the issue of who owns the land. You know, the Jews claim that they own it, and the Arabs claim, the Palestinian Arabs claim that they own it. And that's what it boils down to. And so why are we so interested about it, as our nation and the rest of the world? Well, it's because this small country that we just saw is where most of the great events of the Bible occurred. Starting from the time of Abraham, going to Moses and David, and to Christ. And so there's a lot of interest based on that. Because, in fact, if you look at the breakdown, and I looked online, and the 2009 statistics show that the Muslim population right now is at 1.6 billion. Christian population, and use that loosely, that term loosely, Christian, is about 2.2 billion. So you add that up, you have about 3.8 billion people in this world who have some type of interest in this area. And the small little aspect of Judaism, breaking that out as a third, there's only 18 million people considered to be Jewish in the world today. So again, the world population in 2009 was estimated at 4.5 billion. Out of 4.5 billion, 3.8 billion is concerned about this area because of the historical perspective based on their religions. That's about 85% of the world population. So that's why it's so significant today. Most of the 2.2 billion Christians, they're again Christians loosely, claims that the current events in the Middle East today somehow are in the process of fulfilling Bible prophecies. And that has all started with the pre-millennialism aspect and philosophy that built up that idea that the Jews must possess the land of Israel in order for Jesus to return. He needs to set up this earthly kingdom, rebuild the temple, and rule from that temple there in Jerusalem to fulfill prophecy. So there's a new world order, a new dwelling place for Christ and so forth. And there again, that's the foundation of premillennialism. And that's why it's so important today. So, to whom does Palestine belong to? Well, guess what? I can state that the answer is here. As always, we always need to turn to the Scripture to find our answers in life. So let's first take a look at some facts that we kind of leveled the playing field, if you would. Palestine, the name Palestine itself, if you look in Genesis 10, 13 to 14, and Genesis 21, it's derived from the Philistines. And there again, they were a migrating people who lived during the time of Abraham, during that time frame. So that's when we're first introduced to the people of the Palestinian area, the Philistines. So we're very familiar with biblical history and the conflict that the Jews have had with the Philistines. The name Canaan, again, is derived from one of Noah's grandsons. As we all know, the son of Ham. Again, the promised land, the land of the inheritance promised to Abraham. The three promises that we read about in Genesis. Currently, the Palestinians claim that they are related to Abraham. And they base that off of Genesis 25, 12 through 16. Now, this is a story about how Abraham was promised a son, an heir. And Sarah, as most of us know, thought that she'd speed up the time frame because it had been about 11 years or so since the promise had been given to Abraham that he was going to have an heir, and no heir had yet come. So being impatient, she went ahead and offered up her maidservant, her handmaid, and she bore, Hagar bore Abraham Ishmael. And then later on, upon the time frame that God had in mind, he later had Isaac, that Sarah had Isaac. But this right here is very important, and that we must understand this, what we're talking about here in this story, because of the fact that, you know, God didn't promise the heir to a handmaid, to a maidservant. The promise was to a free woman. And there's this distinction that we have to make sure that we understand. The distinction is very important. And if we turn to Galatians 4, verse 22, we're going to take a look at that. Galatians 4, verse 22. For it is written that Abraham had two sons, the one by a bondwoman, the other by a free woman. But he who was of the bondwoman was born according to the flesh, and he of the free woman through promise. Which things are symbolic? For these are the two covenants, the one from Mount Sinai, which gives birth to bondage, which is Hagar. For this Hagar is Mount Sinai in Arabia, and corresponds to Jerusalem, which now is, and is in bondage with her children. But the Jerusalem above is free, which is the mother of us all. For it is written, Rejoice, O barren, you who do not bear. Break forth and shout, you who are not in labor. For the desolate has many more children than she who has a husband. Now we, brethren, as Isaac was, are children of promise. But as he who was born according to the flesh then persecuted him who was born according to the Spirit, even so it is now. Nevertheless, what does the Scripture say? Cast out the bondwoman and her son, for the son of the bondwoman shall not be heir with the son of the free woman. So then, brethren, we are not children of the bondwoman, but of the free. So the distinction there is that we are from the promise given to Abraham that we're going to have that freedom. And the fact is that the Muslims, they don't want to tie themselves to Ishmael because of the fact that, there again, he did not receive that promise. God did state, though, that Ishmael was going to be the father of a great nation and have many people. And that's the Arabs of today. But there again, the Muslims of today try to tie themselves back to Abraham to say, this is our claim. And that's very important that we have to understand. So the Muslims hang on to Abraham. So, the origins of the modern conflict. Let's take a look at that. There again, as I said before, Israel became a state May 14th, 1948. Now, a lot of people say that right after World War II, because of the fact that the 6 million plus Jews were terminated and they were tortured and their homes were taken away from them and everything else, that it was payback. And actually, that wasn't the truth. The fact is, the foundation for establishing Israel as a state has a paper trail of hundreds of years. And it's just more recently, starting in the turn of the 19th century, that the British had a movement to try to establish Israel and Palestine yet again. And it was World War II that was a catalyst to go ahead and to give them opportunity, based on the emotion, to go ahead and reestablish that. And the British, there again, were leading that effort. However, there's a CIA classified report, and it is no longer classified, and I did get this on open sources, so nobody can turn me in. It was on open sources. But anyway, in November, 20 November 1947, the CIA had created this report, and they gave it to the President of the United States. And I'll just go ahead and I want to read a couple of excerpts from the summary here. Armed hostilities between the Jews and Arabs will break out if the UN General Assembly accepts the plan to partition Palestine into Jewish and Arab states, as recommended by the UN Special Committee on Palestine. While the governments of the Arab states are not expected to officially make declaration of war, they will not attempt to keep their people, especially fanatic tribesmen, from joining the battle. They may even encourage such actions and furnish clandestine assistance as well. Terrorism. Whatever the UN recommends, they will attempt to establish a Jewish state after the British withdrawal. This is talking about Israel, the Zionists, now set for the British to leave in August 1948. The U.S., by supporting partition, has already lost much of its prestige in the Near East. The U.S. used to have prestige in the Near East? Whoa. In the event that partition is imposed on Palestine, the resulting conflict will seriously disturb the social, economic, and political stability of the Arab world, and U.S. commercial and strategic interests will be dangerously jeopardized. It is possible that the responsible governments will refuse to sign pipeline conventions, oil concessions, concessions, civil air agreements, and trade pacts. The thing was that at the time frame, we were trying to help establish their infrastructure there in the Middle East, and we had good relations with the Arabs at that time frame. The various projects which are necessary to raise the standard of living cannot be carried through without U.S. assistance and guidance. With the U.S. committed to partition, such developments will be shelved indefinitely. The poverty, unrest, and hopelessness upon the communist propaganda thrives. The poverty, unrest, and hopelessness upon which communist propaganda thrives will increase throughout the Arab world. If the UN recommends partition, it will be morally bound to take steps to enforce partition, with the major powers acting as the instruments of enforcement. The dangerous potential of such a development to U.S.-Arab and U.S.-USSR relations need no emphasis. And so, it's been established that if Israel becomes a state, there's going to be problems. And the United States, as is today, we are the power of the United Nations. And what happened? The United Nations went ahead and went forward and authorized partitioning the land, giving the Jews more than half of the west of the Jordan River. So what happened? War broke out. The war has become a constant reaction in that time in this region. There again, War of Independence, 47 to 49. Started off right off on the bat there. Sinai Campaign, 1956. The Six-Day War, 1967. The War of Attrition, after Israel really wiped out Egypt and so forth, and that started in 1968, lasted for 2 years. And then the Yom Kippur War, where Israel was caught off guard. They almost lost it. And I don't know how many people realize, in 1973, we were this close of getting involved. Russia was this close of getting involved. That would have been World War III. We were hairs away from launching and helping Israel at that time frame. I don't know how many people realize that. Lebanon War, 1982. Again, Gulf War 91, there again, Iraq was launching Scuds and so forth, trying to get them involved so it would spark a huge old mess there in the region. We were able to keep them at bay, but they were still getting bombed and so forth. The Second Lebanon War just recently, and then we have continued terrorist activity that's going on. And the thing is, there again, lots of conflict, and we have this man right now, President of Iran, and he's been quoted, Mahmoud, there you go, Ahmadinejad, today stated that Israel must be wiped off the map. So you can see the conflict. But there again, conflict goes back further than what we've seen here in the recent modern history. So what's the Jewish claim? Let's take a look at that real quick here. Back in the days of Joshua, God gave Canaan to Israel, and he ordered the Canaanites destroyed. And we see this in Joshua 6, 3 through 6. So let's turn to there. Every place that the sole of your foot will tread upon, I have given you. As I said to Moses, from the wilderness and this Lebanon as far as the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, into the great sea, there being the Mediterranean Sea, toward the going down of the sun, you shall be your territory. No man shall be able to stand before you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will not leave you nor forsake you. Be strong and of good courage, for this people to you shall divide. For this people you shall divide as an inheritance the land which I swore to their fathers to give to them. So again, God gave said, go forward with courage. Take your inheritance. Grab it. Seize it. Conquer it. It'll be yours. The problem is not the end of the story, as the Jews would have you believe, because of the fact that it happened. I mean, they got it. Because of the fact that God's land promise was fulfilled. The Jews continue with, here, Joshua 21, 43 to 45. Toward the end of Joshua's life there again, after taking Canaan and taking the promise and dividing among the 12 tribes and so forth, he states in, starting in verse 43, so the Lord gave to Israel all the land of which he had sworn to give to their fathers, and they took possession of it and dwelt in it. The Lord gave them rest all around, according to all that he had sworn to their fathers. And not a man of all their enemies stood against them. The Lord delivered all their enemies into their hand. Not a word failed of any good thing which the Lord had spoken to the house of Israel. All came to pass. Again, let's take a look at what he just said. All the land that he was promised, not a word failed that God has stated, all came to pass. So God did give the Jews the land. It was theirs. They conquered it. Promise fulfilled. But there again, it's not the end of the story. God's promise was conditional. It was conditional. There were stipulations, and so let's take a look at some of those, what some of those stipulations were. Joshua 23, 14 to 16. Turn there. Behold, this day I am going the way of all the earth. And you know in all your hearts and all your souls that not one thing has failed of all the good things which the Lord your God spoke concerning you. All have come to pass for you. Not one word of them has failed. Therefore it shall come to pass that as all the good things have come upon you which the Lord your God promised you, so the Lord will bring upon you all the all harmful things until he has destroyed you from this good land which the Lord your God has given you. When you have transgressed the covenant of the Lord your God, which he commanded you, and have gone and served other gods and bowed down to them, then the anger of the Lord will burn against you, and you shall perish quickly from the good land which he has given you. There again, spiritual adultery. Spiritual adultery. I'll take that land from you. It's gone. The children of Israel had remained faithful. Deuteronomy 4, 24 to 27. For the Lord your God is a consuming fire, a jealous God. When you beget children and grandchildren and have grown old in the land and act corruptly, and make carved image in the form of anything, and do evil in the sight of the Lord your God to provoke him to anger, I call heaven and earth to witness against you this day, that you will soon utterly perish from the land which you cross over the Jordan to possess. You will not prolong your days in it, but will be utterly destroyed, and the Lord will scatter you among the peoples. And you will be left in few number among the nations where the Lord will drive you. Did you hear that? You will be left few in number among the nations where the Lord will drive you. Today, I gave you the statistics as far as the population. 1.6 billion Jews, 2.2 million billion Christians. How many Jews? 18 million. Fraction. Deuteronomy 28, 63 to 65. And it shall be that the Lord, just as the Lord rejoiced over you to do you good and multiply you, so the Lord will rejoice over you to destroy you and bring you to nothing. And you shall be plucked off the land which you go to possess. And the Lord will scatter you among all the peoples from one end of the earth to the other. And there you shall serve other gods, which neither you nor your fathers have known, wood and stone. And among those nations you shall find no rest, nor shall the sole of your foot have a resting place. But the Lord will give you a trembling heart, failing eyes, and anguish of soul. No more homeland. It's gone. And in 1 Kings Here again is parting instructions to Solomon as David is dying. 1 Kings 9, 3-7. But if you or your sons at all turn from following me and do not keep my commandments and my statutes which I have set before you, but go and serve other gods and worship them, then I will cut off Israel from the land which I have given them. And this house which I have consecrated for my name, I will cast out of my sight. Israel will be a proverb and a byword among all peoples. Did God keep his promise? Because Israel's unfaithfulness, there's consequences. We have consequences for all of our actions, and we must remember that. Assyria, Israel was dispersed. Israel came and conquered them in 722 B.C. And they were dispersed among the people. They intermarried, and they lost that purity that they had, that was established when they first entered the land of Canaan. And then, Judah, Babylon came about 606 B.C., and there again, they were conquered. However, a remnant did return from Babylon, but it was governed by others. The land was governed by others, the Persians, the Greeks, and the Romans. Again, did God keep his promise? Absolutely, he did. When the Jews fell from God and worshiped idols, what was God's statement? What was his promise to them? I will cast you out, I will disperse you, you will no longer have this land. He fulfilled his promise on many counts. Now, the premillennialist view. There again, they try to utilize Deuteronomy 30, which is talking about the blessings of the return to God, and also Isaiah 10, 20-23, about the remnant. This is their justification that, hey, Israel needs to be reestablished. They need to be having that area again, Jerusalem. They need to rebuild the temple so Christ can return. But this promise was fulfilled when the remnant returned from Babylon. There was a temple that was built. In fact, here's a picture that they estimate as far as what it looked like. That happened. That was rebuilt. But they didn't have control of the land. There again, the control of the land belonged to the conquering nations, and Israel was no longer in control. Ezra and Nehemiah discussed this truth when they told about the rebuilding of the walls, the gates, and the temple in Jerusalem. You know, Persia, there again, they've learned. Whenever they conquered the people, in order to try to squelch any type of rebellion, they allowed them to keep their religion, because that is one of the most fundamental aspects of controlling the individual, is their faith. If you allow them to continue to keep their faith, then they're not going to be as rebellious. And the Persians learned that. And so that's why they allowed Israel to go ahead and return to rebuild their temple. They still owned the land. They still taxed them. They still controlled them. But they allowed them to worship as they wanted to. And then, after the temple was rebuilt, we come up to the time of Christ, where again, Israel largely rejected Christ in the gospel. And Jerusalem and the entire Jewish worship system was destroyed in 70 AD. You know, and that was prophesied by Jesus in Matthew 24. It talked about the end of time and the destruction of Jerusalem. And there again, we see in the new books, in the New Testament and books, and as in Galatians and Hebrews and so forth, how this temporal type of worship of the old law under Judaism was going to be no longer good enough, because the fact that Christ is going to come to be the ultimate sacrifice. And that old system was no longer required. So Jerusalem's destruction was the final death blow to the whole Jewish system of worship. Because there again, Christ is the ultimate sacrifice. And that's who we need to go to today. The Arab view. Between 688 and 691 A.D., the Muslims built the worship center, the Dome of the Rock, and they claim that this is a spot where Muhammad ascended into heaven, and so this is the second most holiest place for the Muslims. And we heard about that from Mike back in November when he preached about Islam. And there again, the picture of the Dome of the Rock. And the thing is that the Jewish view is the fact that they say, hey, this is the site where Solomon's temple was, not necessarily the site where the temple during the time of Christ, but this is where the site of Solomon, where the primary temple was that God had ordained and gave the instructions on how to build and everything else. That's the original site. And they say that We need, that we need to re-raise that, build the temple again. But why? Why raise an imperfect system? We see here in Colossians and Ephesians and Hebrews the fact that that old system is no longer necessary because of the fact that it's imperfect. It was nailed to the cross. We have the perfection through Christ. And Christ, obviously, was the fulfillment of the third promise given to Abraham. But looking at this whole thing in conclusion here, there is four wrongs, not four wrongs, but there are some wrongs committed. Okay, first let's take a look at the Jews. The Jews were terribly mistreated. There again, in recent history, the Nazi Holocaust, there again, exterminated 6 million Jews. That was that catalyst that I told you about, that there's already a movement for hundreds of years to try to reestablish the property rights for the Jews. But we understood that what would happen if the Jews disobeyed God. But the thing is, there again, the Jews were terribly mistreated after the end of World War II. And there again, many nations felt guilty and tried to go ahead and provide the Arabs, or the Jews, the land back. The Arabs were terribly mistreated. And there again, 1948, all of a sudden, they come in and they rip you from your house. If that happened to you, what would you do? Would you allow that? Would you be happy with that? You'd probably be very upset. Somebody ripped you from your household, took away your businesses, brought in new people and say, hey, this now belongs to them. So they're very mistreated. The promises that were made to the Arabs during that time frame, because they're, again, the United Nations. They were making all these promises to the Arabs. Oh, we're going to give you Palestinians, we're going to give you land and so forth. And it never happened. They're still waiting for that. So why do you think that they mistrust the West today? Of course they mistrust us. I mean, they're, again, just like the Indian. We made all these promises. They're, again, talk with a forked tongue about the Indian. Well, the Arabs can speak the same towards the Westerners as well. The Christians were wrong, or have been wrongly discerning the Scriptures. There again, we can go back as far as with Christianity, back to the time of the Crusades, during 1095. And for about 200 years there, we had the Crusades. What was the primary purpose of the Crusades? There again was to restore Christian control of the Holy Land from the Muslims. Because the Muslims, again, became a power in 680-ish time frame, and they conquered that whole region. And the Christians were saying, hey, we need to bring this back. Well, why? There wasn't a need. I'll talk about that in just a second. But there again, in the past 200 years, there's been this movement that was created by the premillennialists in which they said, hey, there again, we need to reestablish Israel as a nation, set up Jerusalem, build a temple so Christ can come back and reign. There again, there's a lot of problems that we've added as Christians to the situation. And back up one thought here. Along with that, there again, there's been a lot of false teaching that has been going on. And we got to make sure to stand up to the false teaching. Concluding thoughts. Look at, as we are pressed for time here. Israel is a land of two nations and three religions. And again, we have Christianity, we have Jewish, and we have the Muslim nations. The one central problem is that there is an effort to correct the crimes committed against the Jews has resulted in similar crimes being committed against the Arabs. So given Israel the homeland has robbed the Palestinians of their homeland. And there again, there's this anger and this animosity, which is obviously, it can be understood on both sides. But it's important that we must teach against falsehoods and the false doctrine of premillennialism. Because this false doctrine, there again, has a great hand in the conflict today. We have to make sure that we preach the word according to the truth and not misrepresent it. And we're told that there's going to be misrepresentation of the scriptures. And we must understand that while Israel was once holy, and once they were a select chosen people, they are no longer today. Holy means set apart for God's service. Well, Israel is no longer a special people, because there again, there's no distinction between Jews and Gentiles today. There's no distinction between man and woman and slave and free. Under Christ, everybody's the same. And in fact, the thought that you need a special place to worship In John 4:21-24, Christ himself said, there's going to be a time where you don't need this mountain, you don't need this city of Jerusalem to worship. Because as Christians, we can worship wherever. We don't need a special location, a special site. And today, Christians are God's temple. There again, the individual, the church collectively, we are the temple of God. So we don't need to rebuild a building as a temple. That's no longer required. And there again, we see in 1 Corinthians 3:16 and 6:19 that fact. So God keeps his promises. God keeps his promises. And that's the big thing that we also have to understand. Because today, we are told that if we don't obey Christ, and if we don't put his blood on us and become Christians and follow after him and obey his word, on the day of judgment when he comes, we are not going to be considered children of God. And there's going to be a division on the left and on the right. On the left, he disobeyed. You're going to be sent to hell. On the right, you obey, children of God. Come with me. God keeps his promises, and we see that. The promises were fulfilled. The three promises given to Abraham. Nation, land, and seed. All that has been fulfilled. So it brings us back to the beginning. To whom does the land of Palestine belong to? Well, that's obviously a scrambled egg right there. And there's really no right answer, except for the one true answer. If everybody were to listen to the scriptures and see that that's not a holy place anymore, and become Christians and follow after the word, the problem would be solved. But until that time comes where we can go ahead and have that peace, we as Christians have to spread the word. And if you're not a Christian, you need to become a Christian. Because again, God keeps his promises. And the promise is that if you are not a child of God, you will not go to heaven. At this time, we have the opportunity, if you've been studying, and if you want to become a child of God and receive the promise of salvation, because we have a spiritual kingdom, and we're going to have heaven someday. And if you are willing to come forward and make that commitment, now's the time that we stand in.